Hey, Song Surfers, welcome to Song Surfing. It's your friend, John. Song Surfing is a bi-weekly playlist of independent music pulled from the far reaches of the internet. Song Surfing is a part of the Live from the Lincoln Lodge podcast network. Head over to thelincolnlodge.com to explore the other shows on the network and to learn more about the venue that's home to the nation's longest-running independent comedy showcase. Song Surfers, on this edition of Song Surfing with Friends, I'll be joined by pianist and composer Inki Bjarni. And I am so excited to have this artist on. This is going to be a little bit of a different format than our usual Four Friends episodes. Normally, the friend brings in some other independent artists to play, but I am just really captivated with Inki's music. So we're going to focus entirely on that catalog. So here's a bit from the bio. He builds collaborations that challenge and excite, including projects with friends and colleagues in the Scandinavian countries he has lived in and whose open artistic culture is closely entwined with that of his Icelandic homeland. This singular musician's focus produces original works which, while informed by jazz tradition, Nordic folk song, and electronica, rise up from a wellspring of meticulously shaped imaginings, ideas inspired by relentlessly searching improvisation, as well as the people he interacts with in daily life, and also the wonders of the natural environment. After attaining a bachelor's degree in jazz performance at Den Haag, which is the Hague for the Americans in the Netherlands, and a master's degree in composition from the University of Gothenburg, with exchange semesters in Copenhagen and Oslo, Inki Bjarni went on to perform at numerous jazz festivals around Europe. He has released multiple albums, including piano trio recordings, Skarkali and Fjundish, which means the meeting, which invited listeners into a realm of spatial freedom and vibrant expression, and the quintet recording, and we featured a track from this recording. The recording was called Tenking, which means connection, from 2019. And we played the track Kensky Blues on Song Surfing Episode 9, so go check that out if you haven't heard that yet. It's an awesome composition. In spring of 2020, he received 5 nominations for the Icelandic Music Awards for that album and was named the most promising Icelandic jazz artist. His latest album, which we'll be talking about today, is called Lessons, and it's his first solo piano album. It's piano music in an undefined style and is a reflection of the lessons learned in 2020. Released along with the album is a collection of sheet music, so you too can learn to play these excellent compositions. And Song Surfers, I can't wait to hear about how this album came together because it's phenomenal. You really have to go listen to it if you haven't yet. Hi, Inki. Welcome to Song Surfing.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So to start off with, I've never been to Iceland. It sounds like an amazing place. What's the music scene like there?
I would say it's very, there's a lot of creativity here. In different genres, and especially maybe in pop music and maybe experimental pop. But of course, it's a really small country. We are only 350,000. But still, you know, Reykjavik is a capital, is the capital of this country. So even though we're quite few in the city, it's still, like in all capitals of the world, there has to be a music scene with stuff going on. And of course, a lot of foreigners are also involved with the scene here. As musicians or producers, and visit festivals here like Iceland Airwaves, and I would say it's quite lively scene here.
Now, do you primarily play jazz gigs? That's kind of how I know you, as a jazz musician, but is that right?
Yeah, I'm mostly in the jazz and improvised music, I would say. But it happens that I'm called in for playing a pop gig with a singer or something, but it's not really my artistic path, you know. So, yeah.
Sure. And are there are some jazz clubs, venues for that type of music?
There are. One is like in the concert hall, which has like weekly jazz events. And there's a new bar now in town, which has jazz every day, which is great. And there is also Menki, which is more for experimental, maybe more improvised music than jazz per se. So
for the people who are really into hearing musicians do their thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, excellent. How did you get started playing music?
Well, it's a bit of a maybe strange story, but I don't know. I was, like many kids, my parents wanted me to study piano, but at the time I wasn't really interested in playing. I was just playing this typical classical music and repertoire, and I was just totally not interested in playing. But then, when I was maybe around 16, I discovered jazz and Herbie Hancock and Keith Jarrett, and that kind of ignited the spark for me to play, really. So, yeah, that's how I feel. In my opinion, I really started to play music. But before that, I was just, executing music in front of the piano. Yeah.
So it was Herbie Hancock, Keith Jarrett. Yeah, it's interesting to hear you say that because I especially can, and I don't know how accurate you feel this is, but like I feel like I can really hear the Herbie Hancock inspiration or influence in your music, just in the way you phrase things, the way each phrase really seamlessly builds into the next. Everything sounds very melodic and compositional.
Thanks.
So how old were you when you started playing piano?
I was 7. Yeah.
Wow. So you toughed it out for 9 years before jazz woke up the artist inside of you.
Yeah, I was playing it was like this classical music education. I was like on and off. Sometimes I took a break. But then finally at 17, I kind of really got into it, to play music.
Now, was it a lot of technical studies? Did you have like strong technique from that classical background, would you say?
I would not say so. And I sometimes think, I should have continued playing classical music. Then my technique would be better. But I think that if I would have done that, I wouldn't be the musician that I am today. So I'm just... I work with what I have, and maybe my technique will get better someday. Yeah.
So how about in college? You studied composition at some point?
I have never really directly studied composition, except maybe the last years there in the master education. So no, I'm kind of self-taught when it comes to composing.
That's incredible.
And my method... Yeah, thanks.
How do you go about writing a composition?
Well,
it's a big question.
Yeah, there are. I have some ways to do it, but I think the most common way for me is to sit down by the piano and just improvise. And that improvisation may come from something I may be inspired by something. It can be whatever, and I just sit down and play, or I'm just improvising and having fun. And often I often sing with what I'm playing at the piano, and as a kind of method to focus. And but this singing is not something I do always, but then when I have found some idea I like, or something just comes through me which, this is cool, I record it on my smartphone. And then maybe that song idea lies on the smartphone for 2 months or even a year or more. And then I maybe go and look at it more as an editor months later. And I check this song idea and, maybe I can do this. And then I'm getting more analytical about maybe I should change this note or do something with the harmony, you know. I would say like I divide the composition process. First, I'm like the creator, where I'm just creating freely, just like a kid, you know, just playing. And the second phase is the editing phase, where I'm more like more theoretical. Yeah.
When you bring it, when you're playing with an ensemble, when you bring it to the band, I imagine that the composition continues to evolve.
For sure. Yeah. I have actually had that experience to bring a quite pre-arranged piece to a group of people I didn't play so much with. They completely destroyed the song, but destroyed it beautifully. And that was like a revelation for me. Okay, maybe it's also, you know, that I shouldn't always... My vision of a composition isn't always the best vision. So in their hands, they destroyed it really beautifully and it became so much better. So I always keep that in mind, that I want my music to be kind of open. And if some people can open it up more than me, I'm very happy. So, but it actually takes this type of attitude I didn't have at the beginning, you know, for years. I was like, okay, this is how it should be. Like I was telling to the band members, but it's nice to have, let it be organic. And if that's a good word for it, I don't know. Like,
When did that switch happen? When you were moving more toward the collaborative way of doing things?
I guess that was only in 2017, maybe. Before that, I was more like arranging what every band member should do and have a very clear idea about everything. But
wow, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm mixing up the titles here. One of your albums, I think the title translates in English to connection.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I guess that makes sense, right? Would that be about the time when you had started to look at it more as evolving communication with the other musicians you're playing with?
Definitely. But this tanking is also referring to my connection to them as musicians, this quintet, and my willingness to keep that connection going on because they live in different countries than I am. So it had like different meanings reasons, this title.
How do you even, if they're everyone's in different countries, how do you arrange even something like a rehearsal?
This summer, actually, I went to Sweden to rehearse, and then we all met in Sweden. So it was, we had like an intensive rehearsal days for 4 days or something. And it works, but of course it's a struggle in a way to not being able to meet them, I don't know, every week or something. But in a way, I think it's also something nice comes from that struggle. Like we approach the music differently, like, I don't know.
There's almost a more intensity or a rawness. I imagine you're on high alert, right? Like you're really listening more than if you had more time and settled in and had been playing with people for whatever, years or for multiple gigs.
Yeah.
When I had asked you, what sorts of things you'd like to talk about, you'd mentioned playing with other musicians who are from other countries and the challenge of getting everyone together. And I'm just thinking about whenever I've tried to play in bands, I live in the city in Chicago, and my friends that I'd want to play with live in the suburbs. And even driving an hour away was a challenge to coordinate. You know, I couldn't imagine if I had to drive across the sea to get to them.
Yeah.
Or fly, rather. All right. So lessons is musical depictions of lessons that you learned in 2020. So what were some of those lessons?
Actually, they are very personal. I had some tough stuff going on in my life. And that's also, I think, why I create music in a way. It's a thing for me to process some things which are happening in my life. And I think I do it kind of not consciously. I just create. Yeah, I think it's not the conscious decisions to sit down at the piano and compose. It's more like a meditation or vitamins for me just to create. And 2020 was a very difficult year personally. And I really grew as a person. I developed really understanding of certain aspects of life. And that was besides the pandemic and all that. So it's quite a tough year.
So let's talk about some of your compositions. So the first one that I'd like to play for the listeners is Sense.
This song wasn't actually composed in 2020. It's like one of the songs which was earlier. But it had a very stupid name to begin with. I called it Mau, which is Icelandic for a love. And I don't remember why. But when I heard this song in 2020 again, I was just going through my old compositions and I could really sense something that this song had character which appealed to me also for that year 2020, and I changed the title to Sense and decided to include it on the record. And it's about sensing things, sensing, you know, maybe for me as a performer, sensing the piano, sensing the sound instead of thinking. I was quite of obsessed, it's not the right word, but I was like, had this idea that as a performer, I would rather sense the music than to be thinking about it, to make conscious decisions about everything, being analytical and all that. So, yeah.
Well, I imagine that's key to the experience, right? I mean, you're playing solo piano, you're collaborating with yourself, or you're probably... Yeah. Highly attuned to the environment.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so we're going to listen to Sense and Impulsive, and then we'll come back and talk about those. Okay, Ingi, talk to you in a minute.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, Song Surfers, we're back, and I'm here with Inki Bjarni. First in the block, we heard the composition Sense, and after that was Impulsive. Inki, to my ears, you've developed a very natural compositional style to your improvising, and the phrases on all of your tracks, but I think especially on Impulsive, this thought came to me. The phrases transition in this really wonderful, and you had said organic earlier, and that's exactly the way I would describe it too, organic way. And it doesn't sound to me like you rely on licks or cliches or your favorite melodic patterns that, you know, Herbie Hancock played or whoever. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really on display in Impulsive. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah. Funny that you're mentioning licks. I've never been a fan of them at all in my playing, in my jazz. Also, when I'm playing more jazzy stuff, I transcribing, like many jazz musicians are transcribing solos and licks and, you know, taking something from that and etc. But I always felt that I had to create something of my own, an own approach, an own style, and whatever doesn't have to be something groundbreaking, but just like my own way of approaching the piano and composing. And in Impulsive, I like this melody. It's a bit like going places, but that are maybe not expected, over kind of a staple thing in the left hand, which at first I was imagining, oh, this is maybe like kind of a singer-songwriter thing in the left hand, like as if a guitar player was playing simple, you know, riffs, and then singing over it. And as I mentioned before, a lot of my melodic lines come from singing and Impulsive as well.
It's interesting that you say that it starts off with almost like a, did you say pop guitar?
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems to have this like circular form to it, right? Where it starts off with the basic chord progression, then the melody continues to develop and you hear these different variations on those patterns from the beginning and it gets... Mm-hmm. more intense, you start to go a little bit outside with some of your ideas, outside of key, you're trying different rhythms. And then it comes around to maybe like a different version of what it started with. Is that something that you developed through improvisation? Was that a conscious effort that you made? How did that come about?
That I would say would be more of an later in the process.
The like revision stage of things?
Yes. That I would say, but sometimes those things happen naturally for me, but in Impulsive, that was not, it was more often thinking like a composer, like yeah. afterwards, you know, what is the idea and how can I expand on that or, you know, make variations with it.
Your inspiration for writing music, does it usually come from an emotional place?
It's quite... Yeah, this subject for me is a little bit, because I realized not so long ago actually why it's quite easy for me to come up with ideas and be inspired. This is quite personal, but okay, maybe I will just tell about it. It's like my mother had a really difficult life, and this summer she passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I think a lot of my creativity comes from being the son of my mother, in a way. I loved her very much, of course, but she had her difficulties, and maybe my creativity is my way of dealing with some things, which I won't go into further. So,
sure. We get into, on the podcast... composers and songwriters, we get into process and where inspiration comes from. And that does come up a lot, that music is a way of personally processing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And one of our the artists that I recently interviewed said that often when she writes a song, the meaning isn't always even apparent. Until later, right? Like
yeah.
She'll listen back a year later and go, oh my God, that's what I was writing about.
For sure. Yeah, this is exactly how it is for me. Like many of, a lot of music I'm composing, I don't really know where does it really come from and what is the meaning of it and why have I created this idea. For example, also a song which is on my quintet album, and I was always wondering, I named it Ballad for My Fearless Friend. But also now, like 2 years after that record was released, I know why I named it. But at the time I was coming up with this song title, I wasn't really sure why did I name it this? And I always at concerts, I was like, well, I don't really know why I named this song this, but now I know, actually.
Was your subconscious mind communicating with you?
Yeah, and I think... Yeah, I'm just a weird guy, I guess. Like, I don't know how sometimes my mind works and how my creativity works, to be honest.
Have you ever seen, I think there's a TED Talk video. There's a number of videos out there that talk about our brain on music, you know, how the different regions of the brain communicate and how the different synapses fire when we play an instrument or sing or compose. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something there, right? Like it, playing music, and I imagine writing music, it gets your brain working in different ways and gets to different parts of your thinking working together. And I think sometimes it happens on a level that we're not always aware of.
For sure. And also maybe now something I wanted to add, that I'm in daily life, I'm quite a, you know, thinking person, like organized, analyzing things, you know, kind of on this, isn't it that the left spectrum of the brain, which is more like that?
Sure.
I think it's like that. I don't know if it's still valid to talk about the left and right brain. But then when it comes to music, I kind of get, you know, lose myself. And I'm not that thinker anymore. Like, I'm not that organized, analytical guy. So that's my kind of other me.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So I was looking on your website and you have a duo series on YouTube.
That actually came up in the COVID times. I wanted to do something. I was very bored and I wanted to play. And so, yeah, I invited some guests first to my home, and then I had like a little concert series around this. And the idea was to discuss music and especially improvisation and composing process as well, something like we've been talking about here. It was also a way for me to challenge myself to play with different musicians in a duo, because I like that, to be make things hard for me, actually, because that's where the way how I develop. So it was a nice experience, and it's subtitled everything in English, so listeners can check it out if they're interested.
I like to ask the guests for some advice. So can you think of any compositional, songwriting, creative, anything for the audience, for those that do creative endeavors?
One of the best advice, I think, is that every idea works. And sometimes we get so attached to an idea, emotionally attached in a way, that we think it's not a good idea. But like, give it a year and listen to the idea again, and there might be something there which is quite nice, because often we are so too attached to our ideas. And sometimes it's nice to become detached from them for a while. That's, in a nutshell, how I work with a lot of my compositions. Is that, and
you said you do the voice memo recording on your phone?
Yeah.
So you record and then come back to it at a later time. So that's part of the process for you.
Yeah, I have to admit I'm sometimes too lazy to come back to them. I have like 800 ideas like this. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a lot. You're going to have to hire an assistant.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. I don't know how I will work on this. As for improvising, and you were mentioning earlier that it's nice to have, when improvising, to think of it that it is a composition, that the music which is coming out sounds like it's pre-composed, but it's an improvising. It is an improvisation. That's something a kind of an approach I learned from my now late teacher, Misha Alperin, who was a Ukrainian pianist composer, really an inspiring musician. So he was always telling me that improvisation should sound like it's composed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can definitely hear that in your playing. There are a couple questions about your album that I forgot to ask you, if we could circle around back to that.
Yeah.
One thing that was different about this album, right, is it was a solo piano recording. Mm-hmm. Now, had you been planning on doing that anyway, or was that because of the pandemic?
It was actually an idea I had like in late 2019, that yeah, maybe I should do a solo album, but I never really wasn't sure I would do it. But and it's kind of a cliche, I guess, to be a pianist and release a solo piano album in the pandemic times. But I did it, and I'm very happy I did. It is actually a scary thing to do because there's so much piano music out there. But I just had to, like, it's a matter of confidence, you know. Like, I also, just by doing it, I had my own way of doing it, not trying to compare myself to Brad Meldau or all of those giants.
So before that, all your recordings had been quintet, quartet, trio.
Yeah, yeah.
Format. Do you feel like your playing's changed now, having done the solo album?
Yeah. And also, it was, like you mentioned, I also released sheet music along with the recording. And what I actually did, I was listening to my playing. Some of the music I had written down on paper, but some of it I actually had to transcribe myself. And that was very interesting. I haven't done a lot of transcribing, but like this, I could really see very clearly what I'm doing as a pianist. There are certain things now I know that I do, and it's nice to be aware of it and try not to let it control me or like, you know, have a groundbreaking impact on me. But it's just nice to be aware of some things I'm doing sometimes, like kind of signature things, if it's possible to call it like that.
Yeah, what is one of those things? I don't know if it's possible to describe.
For me, it seems to be that I like to play one line in the left and some more chords in the right. That's something like, for example, in Impulsive, it's like just one line. So no chords in the left hand, more like a bass line or something. And then it seems like I like thirds. Minor thirds is a thing in my composition.
I love that only becomes apparent once you transcribe yourself. Isn't it interesting?
But of course, I think like doing this definitely strengthens my capabilities as a pianist now when I enter a band environment, you know, because I did the solo piano thing. So maybe I will do more solo piano music someday. It was cool.
I would love to hear you play an experimental album.
That's what I actually have had in mind as well. But what I want to also maybe add about this piano album lessons is that the way I recorded it was over 2 days in a church with a nice grand piano and everything. I was completely alone there, and in some ways it was nice, but also quite difficult just to be completely alone. And sometimes I didn't really get into a certain attitude maybe that I wanted, but it's okay. But for an experimental album, I think I would actually want to record it at home, to invest in some good microphones and have the piano just ready. And then whenever I'm in the right mood, I will just press record and play. Little by little, I will have an album of experimental solo piano music by recording it in that way, not in like a special 2-day thing in a church somewhere.
Well, I can't wait to hear that. That sounds interesting. So we're going to play another track of yours, and I don't know how well I pulled it off, but I was practicing. I was on the Google Translate site, typing in the titles of your compositions and just trying to get everything as close to authentic sounding as I'm capable of doing. But I just couldn't get this one. Can you help me out with how to say the title?
This is actually a Danish bicycle route in Copenhagen. So they say Havneringen. So I'm not sure if I'm saying it right myself, but I think it's like Havneringen, something like that.
Okay. Yeah, tell us about it.
I was thinking about Copenhagen when I wrote this piece, because I used to live there for 5 months, and I always cycled on this bicycle route. And when in Copenhagen, I was more exposed to experimental improvised music. And it can't be heard in this piece, Havneringen. I think it's the most experimental piece on the record, I think. I go quite like very colors, very out there kind of thing. So yeah, it's a tribute to Copenhagen in a way, this song.
Copenhagen and the experimental music that's there.
Yeah.
How did you, what brought you there? You said you lived there for 5 months?
It was part of my master's education.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So I did like this Nordic master. So I was studying Gothenburg in Sweden, Oslo in Norway, and then Copenhagen in Denmark. Very cool.
All over.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay. So to close things out, we're going to hear that composition. What's the title one more time?
Havneringen.
And is there anything else that you'd like to, before we wrap things up, anything else that we should cover, or is there anything you'd like to plug?
Listeners are welcome to follow me on social media. I'm actually quite lucky that all my social media accounts are Ingi Bjarni in one word. So I got very lucky with usernames. Also, I have a website, ingibjarni.com. I will have a new quintet album next year. So you can follow me and be informed about that. And thanks for listening and having me here.
Hi, I'm so happy to have gotten to talk to you. And Song Surfers, I've been buying Inky's albums on Bandcamp, so that's an option for you. And I'll be linking to the links that he gave me in the show notes page of songsurfingpodcast.com. Inki Bjarni, thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, John. Thank you.
Hey, that music means it's time for me to say thanks for listening to Song Surfing. And thanks to Inky Bjarni for appearing on this episode. Remember, you can find Inky's links over at the episodes and show notes page of songsurfingpodcast.com. You can follow Song Surfing on Instagram and Facebook by searching Song Surfing Podcast. I don't know what that was, everyone. I'm slipping into like a smooth jazz radio voice or something. I better sign off before I slip into a case of podcast madness. But before I do, just a reminder, folks, that I'm looking for more reviews for the podcast. So if you like Song Surfing, follow, rate, and review. Oh, I feel so dirty saying that, but seriously, it really does help. I've heard that it helps to make the show more visible, but I think the main thing is it helps spread the word. It helps legitimize the podcast. It makes people take a chance on it. In this day and age where every corporation has a podcast, every celebrity and comedian has a podcast, it's harder and harder to find your small, your independent podcasts. So help a podcast out and go review, please. I have that linked in the show notes, so just click in the show notes on the podcast player or over on the episodes and show notes page. Okay, friends.
See you next time.